What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Welcome to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randall. Dive into the live courtroom drama as we bring you unfiltered audio from one of the most riveting trials of the year. Accused of multiple marital murders, Randall's fate unfolds before us. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. This is Dark Vows.
So, Your Honor, we call Detective O'Kelly for the issue of the laptop.
Okay.
Mr. Hamner is trying to make contact with Detective Wilson.
Okay.
So we're kind of doing two things.
Mr. Hamner's walking over and he appears to still be on his phone.
Okay.
So, see what he knows.
He's retrieving his computer right now. I'm going to bother him.
Okay.
Oh, he's logging on right now.
Okay.
So never mind.
Because Wilson and O'Kelly will be witnesses on this, the same motion on the turn.
Yeah, I mean, Detective O'Kelly will be really quick if we want to.
However, the problem is if we start him, we would have to completely log on
Blue Jeans for
exclusionary rules, so we should just start.
Yeah, never mind.
There he is.
There he is.
Hey. Hey there.
Detective Wilson, can you hear us?
Please.
Detective Wilson, can you hear us?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right, you guys got to call Rob Wilson. Detective Wilson, would you be so kind as to raise your right hand so the court can swear your hand?
You do solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give in this action shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
Thank you. Will you please state and spell your first and last name for the record?
Robert, R-O-B-E-R-T, W-I-L-S-O-N.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Detective Wilson, are you retired from the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department?
Yes.
What year did you retire, sir?
2018.
Do you recall in 2008 being one of the detectives that was assigned to investigate murders with the defendant by the name of Thomas Randolph?
Yes.
Do you recall sometime pre the first trial being asked to pick up a laptop detective or a laptop computer?
Yes.
Who was it that asked that you pick up the computer? Who contacted you?
Deputy District Attorney Robert Gaskis asked me to do that. I picked it up from the clerk of the detention center late night in their possession.
Okay. So when you you got the call from Robert Gaskis and then you responded to the detention center to actually pick up the computer?
Yes.
Once you picked up the computer, did you open it or look at any of the contents?
No, I just impounded it.
Okay, and so you impounded it in the Metro evidence vault?
Yes.
After impounding it, did you ever open it, look at the contents, do anything to examine the computer?
No, once I impounded it, I never saw that computer again.
Thank you, sir. I'll pass the witness.
Cross.
Can you hear me okay, sir?
Yes, sir.
Are you able to see me?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm good.
Goatee looks good on you.
Thanks.
Not going to take too much of your time. Couple questions. At the time Mr. Daskis contacted you and asked you to come impound the computer, did he tell you why?
He just told me if it was an order from Judge Miley.
Okay. You have an understanding that at some point in time, Judge Miley was the preceding judge over this case?
Yes.
And you were aware at the time you impounded that computer whose computer it was, correct?
Yes.
You were aware that Judge Miley had issued an order previously allowing Mr. Randolph to utilize that computer in order to assist counsel with trial preparation, right?
I don't recall being aware of that.
Okay. You knew it was Mr. Randolph's computer, right?
Yes.
At the time you impounded it, you had to put a Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department event number on it, correct?
Yes.
And so you put the event number associated with this case, right?
Correct.
You knew it was associated with this case, right?
Yes.
When you retrieved the computer from the Clark County Detention Center, did you impound anything along with the computer?
I believe there was a hard drive and some cables.
What about some disks?
No.
Do you know what happened to the disks that were with the computer at the time it was taken from Mr. Randolph?
No.
Do you know who in the detention center looked at that computer prior to you impounding it?
I have no idea what happened with that computer prior to it being in my possession.
Okay. In your work as a Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department detective, you're familiar with the detention center, right?
Somewhat.
You've been there many times over the years, right?
Yes.
Do you remember who you spoke to at the detention center when you took receipt of the computer?
I have it on my report. I don't remember it offhand.
Okay. Do you remember where within the facility you went?
They have an evidence area that they keep, and I believe that's where I went to collect the computer and the other items.
Did someone physically hand it to you?
Yes.
From the time the computer was taken from Mr. Randolph until it was given to you for impound, do you know who else had access to the computer?
No.
Do you know who reported to Mr. Daskis that that computer needed to be impounded?
No.
Do you know the reason for taking Mr. Randolph's computer and impounding it?
No.
Did you communicate about the impounding of that computer with Detective Dean O'Kelly?
I don't recall, but I'm sure I probably did. He was the lead detective on the case.
Did you ever have any communication with Judge Miley or Judge Miley's court staff about the impound of that computer?
Not that I recall.
Pass the witness, Your Honor. Thank you, Detective.
Redirect this for me. Mr. Tomchak, on cross-examination, suggested that there were some disks associated with this computer. When you went to the jail, were there any disks there?
No.
Had there been any disks associated with the computer, would you have taken those as well and impounded them along with the cables and that hard drive?
I assume so, yes.
Okay. You took what was there from the jail?
Correct.
And that's what you impounded?
Yes.
Thank you. Nothing else, Sean?
Any recross?
There.
Okay. Detective Wilson, thank you very much for your testimony here today. Sir, you are excused.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, Your Honor, we would just call Detective O'Kelly to
say. Okay, we'll call Detective O'Kelly for this. Yeah, we can.
You do solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give in this action shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated. Will you please state and spell your first and last name for the record?
It's Dean, D-E-A-N, O'Kelly, O'Kelley.
And Detective O'Kelly, we've already heard earlier in this hearing your credentials and how long you worked for Metro. I want to focus specifically on the pretrial time, the time between Mr. Randolph's arrest and the first trial that occurred in this case. Are you aware during that time period of a laptop computer that was utilized by Mr. Randolph?
Yes.
And are you aware that at some point Judge Miley ordered that that computer be impounded by Metro?
Yes, I am.
Were you contacted by anyone to get that computer impounded?
My partner, Detective Rob Wilson, was contacted. I wasn't.
Okay. Did you have any conversations about why that computer needed to be impounded?
No.
To your knowledge, or based on impound reports, does it appear to you that Detective Wilson was the person who got the computer from the jail and then impounded it?
Yes, he was, at the direction of Robert Daskus, according to the wishes of Judge Miley.
Okay. Do you have any further knowledge as to why the computer needed to be impounded?
No.
Did you ever look in the computer or examine it prior to the impound?
No.
Did you ever look or pull that computer out of evidence and look at it after the impound?
I did pull it out of evidence last year, but no, it remained in the box.
Was it pulled out of evidence so a defense expert could access and look at the computer?
Yes, it was.
So that was at the request of Mr. Randolph and his counsel?
Correct.
Have you ever looked at the contents of that computer?
I've actually never seen the computer. I brought it out of evidence and maintained contact with their expert who was having some health issues. So there was a delay in getting the laptop or the expert to the laptop. So on that particular day where he was able to make it, Detective Ramos was actually the one that broke the seals, allowed the expert to image the hard drive and external hard drive. Then it went back in the box. It was sealed back up and taken back to evidence. And it remained there until, I want to say, June 26th, around that time, when you requested that I get it out of evidence because it was being returned to Mr. Randolph.
Okay. And so if I'm understanding you, at one point you actually pulled it out of evidence for the defense expert, but the expert couldn't
be there for an examination because of health issues?
I want to say it took like at least 10 days for him to finally get there because of his health issues. I spoke to him on the phone a couple of times. He's either an Aussie or a Kiwi. I can't remember which one. He had a pretty strong accent. But once he was able to get there, it was Detective Ramos that signed the chain of custody, opened the box, allowed him to image it while he stood by. It went back in the box and then was returned to evidence until I got it out this June.
Okay. So you get it out of evidence. Some days pass. Detective Ramos breaks the seals and the defense expert has access. Then it gets re-impounded up until the time period that I ask you to get it out of evidence this year.
That's accurate.
Okay. Any time at all, did you ever look at the internal contents of the computer?
No, I've never seen it.
Thank you. I'll pass the witness.
Ross? Welcome back.
Good to be back.
Fire.
I'm cooperating.
Well, you better. We'll arrest you as there a material witness. Real quickly about this computer. You're aware that at some point this case winds up in the courtroom of presiding District Court Judge Stephanie Miley?
Correct.
Okay. You're also aware that in preparation for that case proceeding to trial in front of Judge Miley, Mr. Randolph was allowed to have a computer within the detention center. Yes?
Correct.
And the purpose of him having that computer was to help assist his counsel in preparation for trial.
I don't know why he was given it, but that is, I'm sure that that's the reason why.
Okay. Makes sense, right?
It makes sense. And I don't know what access he had with it. I don't know if it was taken in and out or if he had it in his cell. I have no idea.
You do know that it was pursuant to an order that Judge Miley allowed him to have that computer with whatever parameters she imposed on it, right?
I would assume that's accurate. I haven't seen the order. I did see the order to have the computer examined by your expert.
Okay. When you say my expert,
well,
you agree, wasn't...
Defense expert.
Yeah, I wasn't defense counsel.
You weren't there yet.
And neither was Mr. Orm, correct?
No. I think Mr. Orm was there, yes. He was already on the case then.
Okay. I was not.
You were not.
Okay. When the computer was impounded, it was in the year 2014, correct?
On tax day, April 15th, I remember, yep.
Okay. Did you pay your taxes?
I did, but not then.
Okay. Just taking advantage of you.
I did before.
All right. So when the computer is impounded, it is at the direction of the court, right?
Yes.
Your understanding of how that happens procedurally is the court notifies Mr. Daskus that the computer is going to be impounded, right?
Correct.
So that he can facilitate having law enforcement impound the computer, right?
Correct.
And then that call is made to Detective Wilson, right?
Yes.
And he ultimately impounds it on, as you put it, tax day of 2014.
That's correct.
And it stays in evidence that whole time, right?
Yes.
In impound.
Yes.
Nobody has access to it.
Well, it's in an impound, but nobody had access to it.
Okay.
Nobody accessed it.
And nobody accessed it. You'd agree the chain of custody record indicates that no one accesses it between February 14th of 2014 until February of 2022.
I don't know where the February 14 of 14 comes up. April 15th.
I might have said February, but I meant April.
Yeah, you went tax day to Valentine's Day, which is, I applaud your effort, but that's, yeah.
Between April 15th of 14 until February of 2022.
What? April 14th of
14. April 15th of 14.
I thought I said April 14th.
Tax day, 15th.
No, Valentine's Day is the 14th.
You said tax day, but I thought it was.
And then he switched to Valentine's Day.
Don't be forgetting Valentine's Day.
Okay.
Okay, April 15th of 2014.
Until, so between those two times, no, nobody accessed it. No, it didn't come out of impound.
Okay, so here's what I want to ask you about. What caused the court to take Mr. Randolph's computer?
I do not know.
Okay. Do you know of any conversations between the court and Mr. Daskus on that issue?
I don't know of those conversations. I'm sure they took place if Mr. Daskus related to my partner to have it impounded.
Okay. Do you know of any communications between Mr. Daskus and your partner, Rob Wilson, regarding the impound?
I don't know them personally, but I know based on the property report that was where it came from. It came from Robert Daskus to my partner, Rob Wilson. He retrieved it from a DST specialist at the jail, and then he impounded it. And it was at the wishes of Judge Miley.
Okay.
But I don't know why.
Okay. That's my question. Presumably something happened that caused Judge Miley to take back the computer, right?
I would expect, yes.
Okay. And you just can't tell us what it was?
I don't know what it was.
And you can't tell us who looked at that computer between the time it was given to Mr. Randolph until it was impounded on tax day of 2014?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the procedures are with CCDC, if he's allowed to have the access to the computer, if they somehow then also have access to make sure that he's utilizing it properly. They may have those procedures. I don't know. So I don't know specifically of anybody that was granted access to it based on procedure or not. But I know we in Homicide did not access his computer.
Okay. And so the record's clear. There were no communications, according to your testimony, between the district attorney's office and the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department about the content of the computer.
That's correct.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Any other witnesses regarding this issue?
No.
Okay. Do we have the other motions don't require witnesses?
They do not.
Okay. So if you guys want to go forward, let's go forward and argue these two.
Sure.
And then we'll break for lunch, and then we'll come back and get the rest.
Okay.
So in regard, let's back up. Go back to the motion in limine to suppress the video walkthrough. I have read the motion. I've read the state's opposition. I've also had an opportunity to review the video that was provided, and now we have heard testimony. Since this is the defense's motion, defense, your argument?
No, I think to the large extent, the pleadings encompass the arguments that we have. It is very clear, and I know Your Honor was provided a copy by my office of the walkthrough, and I think Mr. O'Kelly mentioned it today, and I think Detective Vaughn did as well. At the inception of that video, you can clearly see indicia of impairment on the face and in the body of Mr. Randolph. His words are slurred, his eyes are droopy. Detectives testified today under oath that they took no precautions in order to ask him questions about whether he was impaired. Knowing that it was going to be recorded and knowing they were going to use the content of that walkthrough against him. Mr. O'Kelly testified that he developed a gut feeling as it related to the evidence. Obviously, our position about the case is clear, but as it relates to this particular piece of evidence, you can't take an individual who you know has prescription medication, who you know that prescription medication is mind-altering, who shows up to the walkthrough very clearly under the influence of those prescription medications, and then have him try to recreate a dynamic scene of a tragic nature and then later use it against him. It's fundamentally unfair. The jury shouldn't be allowed to see it. The detectives can testify about the content of their investigation without it, and we ask them to be suppressed.
State,
Your Honor, as the state noted in its opposition, there is no police conduct related to his mental state, so there would have to be coercive police conduct in order for the walkthrough, even if he had exhibited signs of being under the influence, for it to be suppressed. Coercive police activity is a necessary predicate to finding that a confession is not voluntary within the meaning of the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. That's Colorado v. Connolly, 479 U.S. 157. And the state cited other cases that go on to explain that as well. The state would also note, and the court has certainly had access to the recording to make its own finding, there's simply no indication that he's impaired. He is able to answer questions. He's able to move around. He gets down on the ground to explain things. He stands up. All of his questions are normal questions when he's interacting with the detectives. When they're talking to him, he's tracking the information, and he's relaying appropriate answers that are consistent with someone who is oriented and lucid throughout the hour of the
approximate time of the walkthrough itself. And then even if the court was looking for further indicia of the voluntariness of that statement, we've now heard testimony today that after that walkthrough took place, Mr. Randolph signed a consent to search clause, which further suggests cooperation with detectives, and then even after that, he shows up for an additional interview sometime later. There's simply no legal basis upon which to suppress the walkthrough.
Okay. Any reply, Mr. Tomczak?
No, Your Honor, one minute.
All right. Well, I did have an opportunity to view the video as well as hear testimony today. This court does not find that there was any police conduct, let alone coercive conduct, in regards to this video walkthrough. When the video walkthrough begins, there's a statement by Mr. Randolph that he is cooperating, but the follow-up to that statement is he's going to go through with this, and he does go through with this. And the court was actually noticed as I was watching the video that a lot of what he is saying is mirroring and or tracking a lot of what was said in the statements that we discussed last week. So based upon that, the court does find that the statement was voluntary and the statement was knowingly given, as well as the detective testified that did not see any indicia that he was unable to cooperate. So for those reasons, the motion to suppress is going to be denied. The defense motion to dismiss the charges for a violation of the attorney-client privilege. I have read the motion. I've read the state's opposition. I've also read the reply. And we have heard testimony. And I know the defense's argument will be a little different based on the additional evidence we were able to uncover since the motions were filed. But anything else you want to add?
I believe the parties are both prepared to submit on the pleadings and the record.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That motion is going to be denied as this court does not find that there's been any showing that anyone has accessed that laptop from the time it left Mr. Randolph's possession until it was booked into evidence on tax day of 2014, and then it was taken back out of evidence per the request of the defense counsel so that their expert could have an opportunity to view it, which I believe was February 17th of 2022. So based on that, that motion is denied. Okay, so the defense has a motion to strike the state's notice of expert witnesses that coincides with the motion that the defense filed in regards to Detective Mogg and Detective O'Kelly's testimony. I believe, as I previously stated to you, that some of the information that will be elicited through the arguments of both those motions will kind of overlap, but I will take argument on both of those at the same time with the understanding we'll do that this afternoon, and then we will start with the Petrocelli tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
Thank you, Your Honor.
With the understanding that the witness is not present, we are going forward about it.
Understood. If whatever the court's schedule, obviously we'll follow that, but I think the parties are prepared to argue the expert one now.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. All right, so let's go forward with the defense's motion to strike the improper notice of expert witnesses. I have read the motion, I have read the opposition, and Mr. Tomczak did provide a courtesy copy of the reply that was filed yesterday, but I did have an opportunity to review that.
Your Honor, may I be heard on this?
Yes.
Your Honor, I don't really understand why a detective can't do what we've been doing for 30 years in these courts and longer, and that is get up and testify as a detective. It was sort of shocking to read Detective O'Kelly's testimony during the last trial when he theorized that Sharon, the victim in this case, I don't know if you've ever seen the injury, it's a terrible injury to the back of her head, that for some reason he claims that she's on all fours. And that maybe she hadn't died right away and she was on all fours. I don't see how he can possibly come up with that type of information. He's not qualified to do it. He at one point says there was a coup de grace shot. That caused Judge Miley serious concern. She sort of chastised the state, saying she found that highly prejudicial. He said that in his opinion, based upon another case he saw, this was an execution. Mr. Miller was executed. He described how Mr. Randolph had said a fire extinguisher had fallen during this and made a loud sound. He then said, well, he conducted experiments, and Mr. O'Kelly bumped into the refrigerator a couple times, and that couldn't happen. It couldn't happen. He also said at one point that he talked really low to Mr. Randolph to see if he really was hard of hearing. He wasn't. He fooled him on that, and he could tell that Mr. Randolph wasn't. He also did some things to determine whether he was a liar, and he determined he was a liar. These are things he told the jury. some of which weren't objected to. These aren't, this, he's not an expert in blood spatter. He's not an expert in ballistics because he describes how, when Mr. Randolph describes where he's standing, that the ballistics couldn't have come out the way he said. He also talks about the injuries to Mr. Miller. And based on the injuries to Mr. Miller, it couldn't have happened at all, so the way Mr. Randolph said. I don't think that's permitted at all. He is just going to ultimate conclusions. Whatever Mr. Randolph said, I've looked at the evidence, and I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that's a lie. It's not true. I recognize that the court will, that I would have to make objections, or Mr. Tomchak, when the witnesses are testifying. And I realize that the court will not preclude the witness from giving relevant testimony. But I am very concerned that the state is going to try to qualify him as an expert, which the Ninth Circuit has specifically condemned, saying that it is very confusing to a jury to have somebody testify to what a lay person, or in that case, in the Ninth Circuit case, it was a case agent testifying as case agent, and then sort of also dual role of I'm an expert and I know these matters. And in fact, Detective Mogg, at one point in his testimony, talked about how all this jewelry just appeared to be costume. Again, he's not qualified for that, and we can cross-examine him over that. But it's a little concerning that Detective Mogg also testified in a prior murder that was considered by the Supreme Court about how an individual was laying down at the time. What we're really just trying to do is just make sure that a detective, the detectives in this case, testify the way they do in every other case in our jurisdiction. They testify as detectives. They can come in and testify like they did today, facts, knowledge. But I don't think it's fair to have them say that they talked to Mr. Randolph, they determined he's lying. It cannot occur this way. So, yes, there was one other that I have missed, and that is, Mr. Randolph had been away in Utah before the day of this incident, and he was going away after. Detective O'Kelly said burglars don't come on the would come on that day. That wouldn't be the day the burglar would come. So how Detective O'Kelly knows what day a burglary is going to happen and what's in Mr. Miller's mind, we can easily argue. In other words, Judge, it's pretty easy for us to argue on that day. Mr. Miller knew that Mr. Randolph and his wife were away. He also house sits, or according to the Millers, he was involved in potentially house sitting. So this was a perfect time for him to commit a burglary. I understand the state can argue that's not when Mr. Miller should have, would have committed a burglary. They can argue that to a jury, but to have a detective making these type of sweeping conclusions, and I can imagine that a jury would think, well, he's a detective, he would know when somebody's going to commit a burglary. No, he wouldn't. And so a lot of his testimony is just really out of bounds, and we don't want to do this while Detective O'Kelly's on the stand in front of the jury objecting constantly. But we would ask the court to strike the expert notice. He can still testify. Detective Mogg can still testify. We're not asking that they be precluded. And it's simply just that they do it under the bounds that this court does in every murder trial that the court hears. And so I would ask that they be stricken, Detective O'Kelly, as an expert, and that excited summaries and sort of explaining how coup de grace shots and executions and how Mr. Randolph is lying should be, you know, very regulated. We'll object if it comes out, but we wanted to notify the court that we found that to be inadmissible and incorrect.
Your Honor, with the court's permission, we have an intern under Rule 49.3, Tyler Christiansen, who's going to do the argument for the state, if that's okay.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honor. So to the extent the defendant's motion takes issue with page 164 of Detective O'Kelly's testimony at the first trial as it relates to Sharon Randolph, the possibility that she may or may not have been on her hands and knees at some point, the state has no intention of eliciting that testimony from the detective this time around. So that particular issue shouldn't be relevant going forward. So as it relates to the Ninth Circuit decision that the defendant cites relating to dual role testimony, a detective testifying both as an expert and both and to facts, Ankrum, the Ninth Circuit decision, does not categorically prohibit dual role testimony. Dual role testimony takes place all the time. And in fact, in that decision, the Ninth Circuit held that a simple jury instruction indicating to the jury, hey jury, this is what expert testimony is. This is the expert testimony that the state or the defense intends on eliciting from this witness. And, hey jury, here's what the facts are. Here's what the facts that we intend on, or that the state or the defendant intends on eliciting from this particular witness was fine. The court held that that simple instruction and the prosecutor couching their language in, as the defense counsel said, case agent, in your expert opinion, fill in the question there. Those two things were sufficient to cure any concerns with jury confusion or unmerited credibility and should not prohibit the detectives from testifying both as factual lay testimony, or providing factual lay testimony, and also providing expert testimony. And as it relates to the decision that the defense counsel mentions, which is Pete v. Stage, the 2017 unpublished decision from the Nevada Supreme Court, the Nevada Supreme Court specifically reprimanded the state for failing to notify Detective Mogg as an expert witness when the state intended on eliciting from Detective Mogg inconsistency analysis, analysis that no lay person could have done. The state, pardon the court, held that that relied on expert knowledge that as a detective he had and required notice as an expert. He was, in that case, comparing blood spatter evidence to his understanding of self-defense and the defendant's statements. And those two things were inconsistent. And that inconsistency analysis was not, or pardon me, in that case, needed to be notified as expert. In this case, that actual issue has come up before in the first trial. During the bench conference on page 148 of Detective O'Kelly's testimony, Judge Miley said, pardon, Detective O'Kelly said that Mr. Randolph was lying. There was an objection. At the bench conference, Judge Miley said he can't testify that he was lying. He can say it's inconsistent with what Randolph told him, though. As well as the DePepe case, which was cited in the defendant's own motion, the quotation from that case, which is a Seventh Circuit case from 1998, says that the engineer, the expert in that case, might testify as an expert, as the engineer, that the defendant's explanation for the decision was not sound, parentheses, from which the jury might infer that money was the real reason. The detective, the state has no intention of eliciting from the detective, hey, detective, was Mr. Randolph lying? That was, there's no intention of the state to do that. The state does intend on saying, based off of your expert understanding of ballistics, blood spatter, etc., investigations, homicide investigations generally, procured over 25-year careers, were the defendant's statements inconsistent with blood spatter, ballistics, the placement of Sharon Randolph's body, and any other understanding of forensics. So that inconsistency analysis has been permitted in court before. It was specifically the court reprimanded the state and Pete for not noticing them as expert. So that particular part of the testimony should be admitted. As far as Mr. Miller, the testimony about Mr. Miller, understanding that the Randolphs were going to be out of town around the date of the homicide and why that particular, why Mr. Miller may or may not have made that decision. The state, once again, has no intention of eliciting from Mr. Miller, pardon, from the detectives, what was Mr. Miller thinking? Why do you think Mr. Miller did this? Well, the state does intend on asking, because the investigation, the thoroughness and the direction of the investigation will be at issue in this case. The state intends on eliciting from the detective, what about this information you discovered made you alter the course of your investigation and focus in on Mr. Randolph? Why did this strike you as odd as an expert in homicide investigations for 25 years? Why did that make you suspect something was off and therefore direct the course of your investigation? It's not going to the state of mind, intent, or motive of Mr. Miller. It's not even going to the truthfulness of Mr. Randolph. It's going to what did the detectives think, understand, and why did that change the course of the investigation after they learned about this piece of evidence.
But to get to what the detectives thought or understood, are you guys going to be basically insinuating that it's the statements of Mr. Miller's that got them to this point? Or Mr. Miller's understanding that the Randolphs weren't at home?
So, Your Honor, there are, actually in Mr. Randolph's statements himself, there's testimony from
witnesses as well as Mr. Randolph that Mr. Miller was aware that they were going out of town, they were going to come back and, you know, kind of be here for 2 days and leave again.
Okay.
The state certainly plans to elicit testimony that Mr. Miller would have been aware that there would have been a window of time when they were home, but on either side of that, Mr. Miller was aware that they would be out of town.
Okay.
We certainly plan on asking the detectives and pretty much any witness whoever hears about this case finds it kind of odd that Mr. Miller would choose that time, the time they were home, to do a burglary or do or stage a robbery or burglary or whatever. We plan to ask those questions of detectives, like, did you find that odd? Did that seem strange? Wouldn't a more advantageous time to do a burglary be when the people aren't home? Or when you know they're going to be out of town. Certainly, with 25 years, well, probably combined like over 50 years of investigative experience between Detective Mogg and Detective O'Kelly, they could say that that does not seem like an optimal time to do a burglary when you have ample opportunity on either side of the time period when the Randolphs are home to do a burglary. So we do plan on asking the detectives that. Certainly, on cross-examination, Mr. Tomczak or Mr. Orem could say, you know, people make bad decisions, you know, this wouldn't, it's not like a definitive piece of evidence, but certainly the state will be pointing out that the scenario that Mr. Miller decided to burglarize the Randolphs' home at precisely the night he knew they'd be home is a little bit hard to believe.
I'm sorry, Ms. Morgan.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Okay, no,
sorry.
Can we read that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead, Mr.
Your Honor, Mr. Miller knew that Mr. Randolph and his wife were going out to celebrate Mother's Day and that they were going to be gone for approximately 4 hours, movie and dinner. And this is the time he wants to do it. I understand that Ms. Weckerly, Mr. Hamner, can go to the jury and say, this makes no sense. It makes no sense. But to have a detective who, by the way, expert in homicide, at the time of this crime, I believe Mr. O'Kelly had 2 years of experience, and we're going to let him testify like he knows everything about, he's an expert in homicide. He's the investigator. He has a vested interest in making sure that there's a conviction because he's made the arrest. He believes in that arrest. But to let him talk about blood spatter, and I heard the prosecutor say, yeah, he's an expert in blood spatter. No, he's not. And he's not an expert in ballistics. They have experts in those fields that they can call. They have, I believe Mr. McPhail has knowledge of blood spatter. They have ballistics experts that can come in and testify. And so I understand that detectives have a right to testify to facts. And they could say things like, the defendant said he was at McDonald's at this time. We got the video. Detective, were you able to find him on the video? I cannot see him. Okay, that's fine. I understand that. That's the observations. But to then make the determination for a jury, he is not on the video, he is lying, and he is lying for this reason. That is the inappropriate part of this. And so I don't understand why he's going to be qualified, these two as experts. They're not experts in homicide. I think Mr. Mogg was only in homicide for about 5 years prior to this. And you've had detectives with a lot more experience in homicides testify before you. They get to testify to what they know and what detectives testify to. Additionally, I would ask the court, have you seen detectives qualified as experts? I mean, can we do this in robbery? Could we do this in drugs? Could we start doing this all the time? In my opinion, this is what the defendant was doing, and I'm an expert in drug trafficking, and this defendant is a drug trafficker. I think it's highly inappropriate. I think that he should just be allowed to testify traditionally as a detective does. The expert notice should be stricken, and the court should be aware. And Mr. O'Kelly, by the way, on some of his media, before he came in and testified last time, he made comments to the media, I'm clean, I'm going last, I'm coming in to clean up. Boy, he did. He cleaned up. And so I just want to put the court on notice of that. I think he wants to summarize everything and then conclude that Mr. Randolph is wrong. Your Honor, I would ask that this be, the expert notice be stricken. He can testify, but it should be within the bounds of the Constitution. And with that, I submit it.
All right.
Well, I mean, here's the situation. I understand that in the unpublished Supreme Court case, the Supreme Court did chastise the state for not noticing them as an expert. However, these detectives do have additional information that a lay witness would not have. The person who's walking down the street is not going to have had this experience, not going to have that. So I understand that that's the reason for the expert notice. However, they're not going to be allowed to get up here and do what was done at the last trial and basically testify to everything under the sun because I'm the detective and that's what I said. That's not how this works. They're not going to give any conclusions about whether or not he's lying because veracity is a question to be determined by the jury. The whole argument that was made about, well, this is not an opportune time for Mr. Miller to have, that's a question for the jury. Mr. Orme is absolutely correct. You and Mr. Hamler can get up here and argue till the cows come home. Look at this. Would anybody break into somebody's house when they know that they're at home? You guys can argue that to this jury, absolutely, but it would be improper for Detective Mogg or Detective O'Kelly to get up here and say Mr. Miller would have never broken into, or Mr. Miller had to be under the assumption, would have been in the assumption they weren't home in order to break this house. They can get up here and you could ask them, have you ever investigated a burglary where somebody broke into somebody's house when they were home? You could ask them that because in their training and experience, they absolutely have the ability to answer that. They will be allowed to answer questions that are within their training and experience, and I'm going to let them remain noticed as experts because they do possess information that a lay witness would not have, but they are not going to be able to get up here and give all of these conclusions in regards to what had to be going through Mr. Miller's mind. As far as the ballistics and the blood spatter, I don't know what their experience is in that. So you would have to lay a proper foundation before you get to that. And I don't know what Detective Mogg did in his 25 years. I don't know what Detective O'Kelly did in regards to how they know about that. Because I do know that there are ballistics experts that are certified with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department that have been used in 99% of the cases in this jurisdiction. So I don't know how we're making the jump that now we're just going to let the detectives do it and we don't need the person for firearms. And Krylo is noticed as the very next expert on the expert notice. So I don't know what it is that he knows about ballistics, but you can lay the foundation at that time. And then I will make a decision at that time as to whether they can then be asked that additional question about ballistics and blood spatter, because I don't know how they know that.
Okay. And we'll lay that foundation when we qualify them, and either the court finds them qualified or not.
Well, you know, as Ms. Wackerly, you know the law doesn't require that.
Well, or you can make a. I guess
what I'm saying is, you can lay the foundation, Detective Mogg, in all of the cases that you've investigated. How many times have you dealt with blood spatter?
Right.
What has been your experience in dealing? You know, whatever foundational right. questions you want to ask, and then at that point, you can make the objection, and then you can approach sure. and say, Judge, no, they haven't established anything that says he's an expert in blood spatter, and then I will make the decision at that time.
Okay.
If you can ask that next question regarding the inconsistencies that he may have observed, or he says he observed in this case.
Right, and I mean, certainly as they testify here today with over 50 years experience, they can look at the crime scene photos and know what they saw then, and they are looking at them with the range of experience that they have today. Not the experience they had in 2008, since 2000, it's the totality of their experience and interpretation of a crime scene.
Well, it isn't they're testifying today, but I think what Mr. Orme is getting at is when O'Kelly based her determination, I believe that this is inconsistent and I believe these things. If he made that determination in 2008, that was based on his expertise in 2008 and not the expertise that he has here today.
But his testimony would either be different or it would be the same, right? I mean, he in 2008, he thought this. He investigated 500 other homicides in the ensuing years before he retired. And now he's testifying as he sees the evidence today. I mean, whether or not I get the court's ruling on, look, if we lay the proper foundation for them being experts, you'll either allow or disallow a question. I do have one question I just want to ask the court for clarification on the timing of the burglary thing. I would assume we're allowed to ask both of these detectives, did it strike you as odd or influence the investigation when the explanation offered was, you know, Mr. Miller knew they would be out of town, but somehow this burglary occurred at the time when they would be home? Because that is a factor that they heard from Mr. Randolph that struck them as odd, that kind of brings them into the area of suspicion. I mean, That is a strange
intention. Yeah, that furthers their investigation, but they're not going to be able to get up here and say there is no way that somebody is going to break into somebody's house knowing that they're home.
Understood.
But they're not going to be able to get up there and say that because they don't know.
Yeah, I understand that.
And maybe I can focus the issue a little bit more because it's not a matter. We have no objection to Cliff Mogg or Dino Kelly getting on the witness stand and saying, look, I'm an experienced homicide detective, and I have all this training and experience. I've done all these cases, and when I've reviewed the evidence in this case, this is why that was important to me, and this is what I believed about it. That's appropriate detective testimony. We're not objecting to that. What we're objecting to is the idea that, I mean, you read the expert notice. I mean, it's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever read as it's put on an expert notice. It doesn't read as an expert notice. I don't think it was written by either of these prosecutors, but it's like a summary of these are all things they're going to testify to, and oh, by the way, they're experts. When we ask an expert an opinion question, it's after doing all of these things, have you reached an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to this? If they're noticed as experts on the issues raised in that expert notice, they can look at the jury and say, to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as an expert in homicide investigations, what Mr. Randolph said is a lie. The burglar wouldn't have
this time, Jake. There's no way we're going to get to a point where Cliff Mogg or Dino Kelly can say to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty this is what's, because they don't know that. There's no way they have the answer. So there's no way that I'm allowing that question to be asked of them.
Yep. I mean, burglars do burglaries at stupid times all the time. That's why they get caught.
Well, and that's complete fodder that all of you guys can absolutely get up here and argue to this jury. I mean, I'm pretty sure the state is never going to end this case without saying, and why would anybody break into somebody's house knowing that they're home? And you guys are never going to end this case without saying, he knew that they were going out to Mother's Day dinner and knew that they weren't going to be at home. That's completely the argument you guys can make. And as I previously stated when I started, it's those summary issues, which I'm pretty sure Ms. Wacker is shaking her head, and I know for a fact these two were not the prosecutors who tried this last case. And I know that they have had an opportunity to review all of the testimony in this case, and those are the issues that they are not going to be allowed to say. I mean, though that was completely opinionated testimony that should have never been given, and it's not going to be given here. You can ask them through their training and experience, because they have had a lot of experience, which is exactly what you said. But making that jump that Mr. Miller had to have believed that they would have been, they're not going to be able to do any of that. And you can argue all that to a jury, as they are going to be the person to make the determination as to what they believe happened in this case.
Sure. Understood.
Can I just get one? Yeah. And so if I'm just hearing the court correctly, so for example, hypothetically, you could ask a detective, when Mr. Randolph had indicated to you that Miller knew that they were going to be leaving the next day and were just going out to dinner for a couple hours, would we be free to ask, for the purposes of your investigation, was that a concern for you when you heard that information? Yes, it was. Why is that?
Nor would I ever object to that.
Right, okay. Because he can absolutely testify to that, because that's what took him to the next step of his investigation, I'm assuming.
Right.
I don't know that. Yeah, he can testify to that. It's when he says, Mr. Randolph is lying, or Mr. Miller had to have known that they wouldn't have been at home, or whatever that statement was. They can't talk about any of that because that's improper.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, so 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Yes,
9 o'clock tomorrow morning, we'll be here.
See you at 9:05. Thanks.
We're going to have Patrick Chapman. Did you guys get Mr. Randolph's clothes? Because I got an email, he didn't have clothes.
Yes.
They're at the gym?
Yes.
Our investigator had them on Friday.
And okay, I got the email on Thursday.
Okay.
So I was out of I was out of town, but I read it this morning. So he does have a travel.
And he got a beautiful haircut.
He did get a very nice haircut. We were just wondering, Mr. Tomchak. Yes?
When you're talking to the still witness medication, I'm telling you, well, last time he was here, because of the difference of the time, it was in the afternoon, you can ask Mr. Oram, he woke me up about a dozen times. I need to be awake during a death penalty case, or any case.
Right.
But we can't get this doctor in at the same time. I've been telling him, file a kite. I need him to adjust the times on the medicine so that I'm asleep at night, not in court, but I can't get him to come out. I don't know why it is. They'll send a PA, they'll send another doctor, they'll send some provider, and they say, we can't do anything. Dr. Mapleton has to do it. He needs to do this, like, soon. We start picking a jury tomorrow. I want to be awake during my trial.
Okay.
And all he needs to do is come and see me, and I'll explain to him, just change it to a certain time, and I'll happen to be in the unit, and then as soon as I'm in the unit, having lunch like the rest of you, changing my bandages, brushing my teeth so Chris doesn't pass out, you know, being normal, because I'm sitting in a place that's got water on the floor and stains on the wall, and it's not good for me to be sitting on concrete hours and hours a day when I've got the compressed disc, which is causing the pain. And that's what you get the methadone for. We've talked about UMC saying methadone, the guys are crazy, you shouldn't be getting this, you must be a junkie. I'm not a junkie, I don't do drugs. So we need you to get him to come and see me soon, like today, tomorrow, and then get this, if I'm there during taking a lunch like you guys do, where I'm not sitting on cold concrete, and I can change my bandages, I can do what I just told you, that soon as, and I talk to the nurse, soon as I get there, the COs will call and say he's in the unit, they'll bring me my medicine.
And I'm going to make those requests, but as far as what they're giving you, I'm not a doctor. No, we talked about this. I can't tell them you have to give them this, but I'm going to call the jail right now and make the request.
They're going to give me what they give me. It's just give it to me when I know when I fall asleep. I want to be awake during my trial. I can sleep at night. I can sleep during the after, you know, at 5, 8 o'clock at night. I can sleep. Okay. At 6 o'clock, I don't want to be sleeping at 2 o'clock, at 10 o'clock.
Okay. I will call the jail as soon as we're done here and address everything.
All right. Thank you.
Do we have any other matters we need to address?
Not on behalf of the state.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. I'll see you guys in the morning at 9.
You're listening to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph. There's more raw courtroom drama ahead as we bring you unfiltered audio from trial. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a minute. More Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph, next.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.